Christmas. The perfect Christmas. The original idea of Christmas was the birth of Jesus. Christian scientists take it a step further, and with Jesus having the title of Christ and being such a perfect follower of the consciousness of God, maybe a more precise way to describe the event of Christmas is the birth of the Christ consciousness within. Certainly, Jesus demonstrated and proved and gave us many examples of the Christ consciousness within his every thought, speech, and action. If we will adopt the Christ consciousness, which is the same consciousness that Jesus adopted, we can be guaranteed that we will have the absolute perfect Christmas. And of course, taking that a step further, Christmas is continuous. It's not just one day of the year. It is continuous throughout every moment of our life. Exploring what that might possibly mean, let's consider what one of the greatest Christian Science practitioners of all time, alongside Mary Baker Eddy and Christ Jesus, actually did with their lives. The individual to which I am referring is Frederick L. Rawson, and there are other great practitioners. Another one is Wentworth Winslow. Although the statement I'm going to tell you is directly from Frederick L. Rawson, he said, "Our purpose on this earth is to make other people happy." Beginning at the age of 30, when Jesus started his public ministry of Christian healing, he certainly did devote his total efforts to making other people happy. He did this by healing every obstacle that appeared in the way of experiencing the natural, perfect childhood of God. In other words, reflecting perfection in their total life, their total experience. One obstacle wasn't any more of a problem than any other one, and so he took care of the healing of sin, sickness, disease, and raising the dead. The same science that he utilized in performing those healings, or being a conduit for the truth to do the healing, he also utilized for events, such as the storm on the lake when he was out there in the ship with the disciples. He demonstrated his total control over the belief of life, truth, intelligence, and substance in matter when he ascended. And he demonstrated much of that prior to the ascension. In addition to Frederick L. Rawson being able to heal every obstacle that he was confronted with through his wide-ranging Christian Science healing practice, wherein he had 15-minute appointments, and in essence, the healing was accomplished by the end of that 15 minutes, or that at least was a catalyst in which the healing was complete shortly thereafter. his understanding of God and truth were so clear that he discovered how to heal retroactively or back in time. In other words, have a healing take place prior to the time that he was notified that they had a desire for him to be involved in bringing about a healing. How he accomplished this wonderful demonstration of control over the belief of life, truth, and intelligence in matter, and specifically time, is described in detail in his publications, which are on our website. What does it really mean to make other people happy? Most of us have received assistance from some source when we were in need. We may not have known or recognized the source, but the problem was solved. And if we think about the beautiful definition of God that Mary Baker Eddy gave us, it states specifically that God is infinite. In fact, on page 465, she says that God is incorporeal, divine, supreme, infinite, mind, spirit, soul, spiritual, life, truth, love. And on page 587, she says, God is the great I am, all-knowing, all-seeing, all-acting, all-wise, all-loving, and eternal. Principle, mind, soul, spirit, life, truth, love, all-substance, intelligence. So she has a little bit emphasis more on a few things she picked out of the definition of God, such as intelligence and substance in the second definition. And of course, intelligence, wisdom, and knowing are part of omniscience. And she tells us that God is omniscient on that same page of 587 in the glossary when she defines the word good. She says that good is God, spirit, omnipotence, omniscience, omnipresence, and omniaction. Can we really experience an accident if God is in control and the only source of action? No, because it states that God is good. Good is the opposite of evil. Good is the opposite of bad. Good is a property of spirit, and spirit is the opposite of matter. So we cannot be controlled by matter if we get a clear understanding that God is spirit, and that spirit is the only substance, and substance is therefore flawless because it is spirit, and spirit is flawless. If we think about letting the birth of the Christ consciousness come to the surface within us so that we can contemplate it and let it be our guide throughout our entire day, every moment, no matter what we're doing, we can let that be our guide. We can be calculating mathematics as an architect in a building where we need to use the laws of physics for determining stress or what force might be exerted on a particular combination of things within the structure. We could be going to the water fountain for a drink. We could be driving the car. It doesn't matter what we're doing, we can be exercising the divine Christ consciousness. How do we do it when we're driving? Well, we abide by the principle of driving. How about if somebody cuts in front of us? Are we going to be gracious about it and think about the golden rule? Maybe we had an emergency in ourselves, our life, our experience, our schedule, and we were so focused on getting to where we needed to get to take care of a so-called emergency that we were not careful in being considerate of other drivers. And maybe we cut in front of someone also. My mother told me one time when I was not very happy with one of my sisters about some things she was doing in her life. I said, "Mother, I don't understand why she doesn't get a hold of her life." And my mother said, "You have no idea what she may be facing." Now, my mother did, because she was a mother and she was caring about her daughter. But here I was, a man that was driven for success in my business, and I was not in the mood of love, which is the most important mood to be in. And that certainly involves consideration for other people and their circumstances. To be more kind and gentle, more loving, caring, tolerant, patient, understanding, and never, ever, ever judge or condemn. Even God does not condemn or judge. God gave us the rules of the road. In other words, the laws that control the entire existence. No matter where we are, what planet we're on even, the laws of God are in force. And he finished his work as stated in the first chapter of Genesis. And everything was very good. In fact, Mary Baker Eddy interprets that to mean not only in the beginning, but in the only creation there is, this is the situation. And then the seven different facets of creation are outlined in detail. Are we going to consider the Christ consciousness, which already has everything perfect, and all we have to do is align with it? No, we don't have to worry about God doing anything. We don't have to worry about God judging us. We're the ones that get out of the realm of the perfection of heaven when we don't abide by the laws that have already been established and were always in existence. We have to get our little self-will out of the way so that we can abide by the Christ consciousness and let the birth of the Christ consciousness come forward and put us into the recognition of the sanctuary of spirit. We are the one that does the divorce. We divorce ourselves from the benefits of God when we don't live the life of the Christ consciousness. We could call it the God consciousness. It's the same thing. It's the consciousness of perfection. But it's not just something that happens. We have to make sure that we have this effective filter at our door of consciousness, so that we only let into our consciousness the things that are true. Now, what is true? What is God-like is what is true. And God is perfect. mind includes perfect creative capacity. All capacity, all functionality, all facility, all capability, all action. And you put that together and you end up with performance. And performance is then measured as power. Think of horsepower. A horsepower, you know, one horsepower, 500 horsepower in a car, it means that it is capable of performing certain feats, overcoming the belief of limitation so that it can get from zero to a certain speed in a certain period of time. And it can climb a hill, or it can pull a certain payload, maybe the weight of itself, or maybe it could pull a trailer, or that engine could be inside of a big truck, or in a train. The engine in a train pulls a tremendous amount of the belief of weight. It's very interesting that Frederick L. Rawson, who was a wonderful researcher, in his researching of Christian Science, he said it was used to be taught, he's from the UK, he said it used to be taught in the schools in the UK that there was no time. Can you imagine? Well, Tesla taught that we don't have to pay for electricity around 1900. Because he discovered that all the electricity that is needed is within planet Earth, already here. All we have to do is convert it to our use. So, knowing that we can overcome the belief of time is only a better mastery of the facts that have always been true. I can't imagine that God knows anything about time or space, because God is infinite. Infinite means there's no limit. There's no limit, period. You can throw mathematics out the window if you think it's going to limit something. No, it's only a convenient way of measuring something. In fact, there's even a symbol in mathematics, which is like a figure eight laying on its side, which is the symbol of infinity. So even mathematics that is normally expressed in numbers has the symbol for infinity. It doesn't have a symbol for the smallest measurement, though. That has to be expressed in words, because in mathematics, everything can always be divided or subtracted. So you can keep subtracting and dividing until you get down to a smaller figure, but there's still ability to divide and subtract again. And that's what they figured out when they were discovering the whole concept of quantum mechanics and quantum physics. It's basically two names for the same thing. And the concept is that matter doesn't exist except in the consciousness of the observer. Now, the observer may not even be aware. It could be a matter of universal belief that is producing what appears to be an opaque piece of matter that appears as a tree that you can't push over with your hand, or a table that will hold up a plate when you're eating. Or you can apply it to anything you want that you consider that is material. But Kurt Russell said it the best. You know, he's a lifelong actor. He started acting when he was, I believe it was like 5 or 6, 7 years old. And he said, when someone asked him about how he compared his acting to his real life, because some actors are considered to be the same in their real life as their characteristics are when they are playing a part. And he didn't agree with that at all. He said, basically, if I'm acting, that's all fantasy land. But my life is the way I really am. So he separated them. He separated them into two very distinct categories. It's like the man who hobbled on his way to the play. This was before they had movies. He hobbled on his way to the play and sat in his chair, aching. And as soon as they called his cue for him to come up on stage, he immediately switched gears and he became a youthful person with no aches or pains, in perfect health. Mental attitude, mental understanding. That is the whole key about our life. If we understand what Shakespeare tells us, and Mary Baker Eddy quotes Shakespeare as the second introductory quote to the entire book of Science and Health with Key to the Scriptures. That's the Christian Science textbook. She quotes Shakespeare as saying, there is nothing either good or bad, but thinking makes it so. The first quote at the beginning of the textbook is from Jesus, quoted by John in the Gospel of John. And it says, ye shall know the truth, and the truth will set you free. And that's what we want to be doing with our thoughts, utilizing what Shakespeare tells us. What kind of thinking are we going to be exercising? Because our experience is going to be based on what kind of thoughts we let into the ever-important word, C-O-N-S-C-I-O-U-S-N-E-S-S, consciousness. What are we going to let into our consciousness? Is it going to be limited, or is it going to be the infinite good? Are we going to be on the path of infinite progression, working toward concrete being? Or are we going to let any little obstruction take us down? Are we going to have an attitude of never quitting, never giving up, but continuing to strive for the truth? Einstein said, questioning, curiosity. He said, curiosity has its own reason for existence. Its own reason for existence. He says, do not ever quit questioning. In other words, continuously seek the truth. If we think we know the truth about something, prove it. Frederick L. Rawson was famous for that. If he had a new idea, a new unfoldment when he was studying Christian Science, he would test it. And if he was able to prove it, then he would adopt it as being truth. That's the reason he was able to discover going back in time to perform a healing. He could make the life of the individual effective without all of the aggravation that went through the time that the man or woman or child was having the problem by going back in time and healing it at the beginning. Because he understood that time was a theory and not a fact. Einstein was famous for his relativity, the theory about relativity. In a very short sentence, he said, relativity is explained about two people sitting together in a conversation. And if a man is with a woman and they're having a very pleasant conversation, he said, time goes by like it doesn't exist. I mean, it flies. But if you're having a difficult time with something, Time goes very slowly. It's like it doesn't move at all. I've been involved in projects where I was so interested in it, I totally forgot about eating, drinking, sleeping, everything, because I was so intently involved. You probably have done the same thing. You've been so interested in something that you didn't let any of the normal activities that we consider normal, such as eating and sleeping and so forth, that never even occurred in your thought. I've gone a couple of days working on something and totally forget about that. You probably have done the same thing. I have friends that have done the same thing. That's what that actor did. He was so involved in wanting to be a perfect actor on the play stage that when his cue was called, he transformed his thought of himself from what he believed his life to be before he was called for his cue to what he wanted to perform as a character on the stage. Everyone has the opportunity to transform their thought. All we have to do is get a clear enough understanding of what our true nature is and take that as the truth about ourselves instead of what the fantasy land view is of something with obstructions and problems and defects. We need to think more about the flawless nature of spirit and less about the flawed nature of a so-called material life, truth, and intelligence in matter. Where should our focus be? Mary Baker Eddy replied to a letter from one of her students who said she was having trouble with her vision and she didn't seem to be able to make any progress on healing it. And in the letter that Mary Baker Eddy returned to her, she said, "Are you able to focus no matter what comes your way?" In other words, are you ready to let the Christ consciousness be born within your thinking? Are you going to accept the truth about yourself as God's child, which is perfect, because God is perfect? And if God is the only creator, then his creation has to be perfect. And as a matter of fact, God could not exist without his manifestation. So if we are part of his manifestation, then we have to be like our source. A painter or a sculpturist or an architect, anyone that is producing a product, that product has to be a reflection of everything that went into that product, which includes the thoughts of the individuals that were involved in it. Our life is a product of our thoughts. I don't believe Mary Baker Eddy would have put that quote at the very beginning of the book if she didn't think that that was really an extremely important thing as a guiding light for whenever we open the textbook to read anything. The same about the quote on truth. If she didn't think that was really a guiding light that should be guiding us, that should be our beacon, our lighthouse. We should be striving to make sure that we're not going to run into the shore and take our boat or ship aground. But it's an alert, it's a wake-up call to make sure that we are going in the right direction and stay away from the danger. The third quote at the beginning of the textbook, by the way, is by Mary Baker Eddy. And she says, "Oh, thou hast heard my prayer, and I am blessed. That is thy high behest, thou here and everywhere." What do you think she's thinking about when she says, "Oh, thou hast heard my prayer"? We have to be praying without ceasing, as the Bible tells us. How can we do that? We can do that if we let it be mental, as we've been discussing in this recording. Are we letting the Christ consciousness be our guide, no matter what activity we're involved in? If we are, then that is our prayer. Our prayer is whatever we do with our thought, speech, and action. Our activities, our thought, our speech, that is our prayer. So we can pray without ceasing, and we are praying without ceasing. The point is, are we praying properly? Are we letting the Christ consciousness come forth and be our guiding light, and stay away from any beacon warnings about the running aground in the rocks? Are we going to stay in the beautiful atmosphere of heaven with our every thought, speech, and action? What part does self-will and ego play in having the perfect Christmas? There is a movie about a coach of high school girls that were on a running team. She had everyone in the world that was telling her that she didn't know what she was doing, and they thought she should be fired. These, of course, were the parents of the girls that were participating in the team. You know why? Because she was training them to not be concerned about anyone else on the track, but that they were to run their race. They weren't running someone else's race, and they shouldn't be concerned about where someone else is on the track. They should be concerned only about maintaining the discipline that she was teaching them. And she started off teaching them how to run the 400 meter distance at a certain number of seconds. And she would require them to continue running it, even though they might be exhausted, until they got it right. And they practiced that every single day. And she started out at a slow pace, because she was interested in building up their endurance. She wasn't interested in them winning the race. She was interested in them winning the discipline that was required to have a perfect race. She never discussed with them the importance of beating someone else, but of beating the limitation that they were putting on themselves because they wouldn't be following the discipline. That's the only thing she was concerned about. So she required them to follow the discipline, so they would be able to run it at a certain speed. And then she raised the speed. She raised the pace just a little bit. Like Isaiah says, precept upon precept, precept upon precept, line upon line, line upon line. Here a little, there a little. Mary Baker Eddy quotes Isaiah And she says, don't try to do everything in one day. She says, just take a little step at a time. Add a little bit of information and knowledge and understanding about who God is and who you are and your relationship. Just a little bit today, and then do a little bit more tomorrow. And if you don't go backwards, if you don't do any backsliding, then you will compound your results. You will compound your understanding, and therefore you will be compounding your experience. And that's how we're supposed to be conducting our life. So this gal took a team that was a failure as a team, and she taught them discipline. And eventually, they were in the state championship contest. Again, she said, don't you worry about anyone else on that track. You run your race. So she got them started, made sure that they were running their pace. And believe it or not, when it was all over, they won the state championship. So they wanted to go up and the parents also wanted to go up and congratulate the coach. And they wanted to all celebrate. And where was the coach? She disappeared. She disappeared. The celebration wasn't the reason she was there. Getting credit for it wasn't the reason she was there. Feeding her ego wasn't the reason she was there. The reason she was there was to teach the discipline that was required to be successful. Accomplishing it was not a big deal. That was automatic. If our thoughts are correct, our success is automatic. It's like a salesman. A salesman will keep presenting the product, which is a quality product at a fair price, and give total perfect service. And he'll keep doing this to everyone and not worry about if they buy. That's not his business. His business is not to make a sale. His business is to provide the product, the fair pricing, and the exemplary service. He's done his job. And then he goes on to the next one and keeps doing it. And sooner or later, sales will come forth. Sales will come forth. He's not worried about the sales because he knows if he does everything correctly and he serves the customer instead of self-serving himself and worrying about himself, he focuses on making other people happy. Sam Walton. Take anything back anytime for any reason. No questions asked. Or they might ask a question just to see why are you bringing it back, but it didn't matter. You had your choice of getting the cash right there or getting a store credit if you're going to go out and want to do some more shopping today or some other day. It was your choice. He was there to make their customers happy, to make the customers of Walmart happy. That was his purpose in being in business. And he started with one store, and he ended up building the largest retail business in the world, in planet Earth, the largest one. That's how to train for anything. Are we training for a healing? We don't have to worry about the healing. In fact, we don't even want to think about the healing. If you read the last 101 pages of the textbook of science and health, pages 600 to 700, 101 pages, you will find that many of the people that are giving their testimony on the healings, they forgot all about the problem. They were so interested in furthering their spiritual understanding of what they were discovering by thoroughly studying the textbook that the problem was not a focus for them. The focus was on getting a better understanding of God and man and the relationship. And as they did that, the healing, not only the healing that they went there to try to heal, but other things in their life were improved or healed. The average person went in there trying to get a healing on one thing, and they ended up getting a healing on five or six or seven things. 85 people had healings on something like 450 or 475 items. And the only thing they did was study the textbook with all their heart and soul. Maybe I should say mind, heart, mind, and soul. But the mind was the mind of God they were using. And that's where their focus was. And the results were tremendous success. If you ever have doubts on whether or not Christian Science is effective, read those 101 pages. And of course, we give you a recommended program on how you can heal anything. There is a link that says heal everything. And if you follow the procedure that is outlined there in detail, you will be able to heal any problem that you have. And you can be a catalyst to help other people heal any problem they have. All you have to do, and all they would have to do, is follow the procedure that is outlined in detail. Don't cut any corners, or then your results are going to be cutting results. In Matthew, it says, "Seek ye first the kingdom of God and his righteousness, and all these things will be added unto you." All these things. I believe that it doesn't mean just meeting human needs, but much more than that. It is all of the understanding of God. Bit by bit, we get a little bit better understanding of God about this particular feature or that particular feature. So, what is the one thing we have to remember that is so important to have a perfect Christmas? Make other people happy. How do we do that? By reflecting the Christ consciousness. Jesus was asked, "Good master," and this is by the Pharisees who were trying to trick him. This was back 2000. Well, no, I'm sorry. It was about, I don't know, sometime between, 30 and 33 AD. Because he ascended when he was at 33 and he started his ministry at 30 AD. But anyway, they were going according to the commandments of 2,000 years earlier by Moses. And there were 10 basic commandments, but people had taken those and made them into hundreds of other commandments. So he said, the Pharisees said, out of all the commandments, what is the most important one? Jesus didn't want to leave any stone unturned. So he said very succinctly and directly, thou shalt, They said, good master, what is the most important? So first thing he said was he set them straight on who he was. He said, why call me good master? Why call me good? There's only one good, and that is God. So right there, he said very specifically, he is not God. In fact, he said he is not even good. I think what he meant was, I'm not the source of good, but I'm only reflecting the goodness of God, which he certainly was doing. He was reflecting the perfection of God. And then he gave him the commandments, or the commandment, which you'll find is interesting. He said, the first commandment is, thou shalt have no other gods before me. That means, love the Lord thy God with all thy heart, with all thy soul, and with all thy mind. And the second is like unto it. Thou shalt love thy neighbor as thyself. He couldn't give them one commandment by itself because they are absolutely, totally connected. You cannot love God unless you love your fellow man. It says very clearly in the Bible that if you can't love who you see, you can never love God whom you cannot see. If we want to have a perfect Christmas, we have to be loving those we see. And if we don't love those who we see, we're not loving God. And if we're not loving God, we cannot have the Christ consciousness be recognized by us or being practiced by us or exercised by us in our every thought, speech, and action. It can't be done. It's either both or neither. We're left out in the cold or we abide by the rules. We know how fast we should be running that race. We can feel it. We don't have to have a stopwatch. We don't have to look at a stopwatch. We can feel when we're running whether or not we're going to be abiding by the rules. We can feel in every thought, speech, and action if we are abiding by the laws of God. Jesus gave us one prayer. One prayer. 3 years of teaching everybody, and he gave us one prayer. How many of us really study that intently and really live it? How many of us even repeat it? When we go to church, maybe once a week, I don't know. To me, I abide by what it says in Science and Health for the definition of church. That institution which affords proof of its utility, elevating the race. Are we doing that? Or are we going into a building and participating in a bureaucracy where we're trying to control other people and what they do? Mary Baker Eddy was so much against having a church that she stopped the first church. She closed it down. A few years later, the people were so insistent on having a church that she realized that they had to go through the experience of having a church and realizing the church was not the solution. So she started the second church. And then after very short time, they wanted to expand it from something that had an audience of, I don't know what it was, I think it was several hundred people or something in the first church. And they built it into one that held 5,000 people with two or three levels of balconies. She didn't even want to go see it. She finally saw it, I think, one time. She couldn't believe it. She didn't ever go to the annual meetings. She sent a letter to be read because she didn't want to be the object of ego or having credit for anything. They're part of her books, the message of 1900, 1901, 1902. And there are other messages like 1897 and whatever. She got rid of the pastors because she didn't want anything to be personal in the churches. So she established a Bible lesson committee to create a Bible lesson. And then she created a provision for the readers to be elected by the audience. And they were merely to read the lesson. Except on Wednesday, the first reader had an opportunity to create the lesson that he was going to read that was supposed to be somewhere around 20 minutes long or so. Maybe it was 30 minutes. It's an hour for the service, and it was only a part of the service. But basically, everything had to be from the science and health and the Bible. No exceptions, not from any of her other books. The Bible and science and health, that's it. And they were supposed to be finding relative passages in science and health that tied into what was stated in the Bible. And that's what they did with the Bible lesson sermons for Sunday. She made provisions in a book called The Manual of the Mother Church, where she would be required to approve and sign in order for certain functions to take place. And when she passed on, that meant that she intended for those functions to cease to exist. What she was telling us very clearly is she did not want the church to continue except as a branch church in Boston. It would just be a church like all the others with no control whatsoever over any other church. And no control over the members of any other church. But unfortunately, the greedy people on the board of directors that wanted to control everyone, you know, human nature, you know, if it has anything to do with money or sex or control over other people, watch out. Because those are the three evils that try to entice everyone. So we have to be particularly alert to guard our thoughts so that we are not a victim. We have to stand strong, like the girls running the race. They have to know how fast they're running and don't get off track. Don't look to the left, don't look to the right, don't look behind you. Look straight ahead. And what's straight ahead? It better be God. It better be the Christ consciousness. If we want a perfect Christmas, which should be our everyday, we've got to be looking at the Christ consciousness, looking straight ahead to our connection with God. That's it. No other choice. What's the difference between giving and taking? Well, we already know that Frederick Rawson told us the most important thing is to make other people happy. I don't think that's taking. Do we make other people happy by taking things away from them? I don't think so. If they want to give it to us and we graciously receive it, that's one thing. That's not taking. But to take something away from someone else, that's not Christianity. That's not love. That's not anything that is of value. What we give provides life eternal. What we take is death. It's the opposite of life. If we're giving, we are experiencing life eternal. If we are taking, we are getting rid of our life. We're losing our life. Mathematics has four operators: add, subtract, multiply, and divide. If you give, you are adding to the atmosphere of life, and you are multiplying the quantity. Because when you give, other people will give. They will have the incentive to give when they receive. So your object is to give. Their object is to give. There's a movie which is about giving and how it can be multiplied into the atmosphere of thought. And the theme of that was that everyone should be giving to other people. And when they give something, ask the people they give it to do the same thing, to give something that someone else needs without accepting or without expecting, rather, to get anything back. Give without expecting to receive. They are supposed to ask the other people to give to three other people. And this brought forth the multiplying effect. That's the greatest kind of giving anyone can do. The greatest feeling anyone can have when they give is if they are giving unselfishly what is needed by someone else without them being able to receive anything back from that individual. It's better not to be like some wealthy people that make gifts of maybe a building on a university or a library, and they want their name up there. They name the building after themselves. They're trying to satisfy an ego. We shouldn't even care if we get a thank you. That's not our duty. Our duty is not to get a thank you. Our duty is to give. If we want to multiply, if we want to add what is in the positive universe of thought, then we need to give. And it will not only add to it, it will multiply the quantity. Because other people, when they receive things, they will realize, wow, giving, that has got to be great. So when you give, you are utilizing the plus sign and the multiplier of mathematics. What happens when you take? Well, what's the opposite of a plus sign? It's a minus sign. You're taking away from the universe of good. You're taking away from the universe of good. And you're dividing what is in the universe of good in small pieces and destroying it. That's what you're doing when you are a taker. You are dividing good and you are destroying it. That's what evil does. Evil operates by dividing and conquering, deceiving, disparaging other people's character. That's how evil operates. They disparage, they deceive, and they divide in an effort to conquer and destroy. So, if we want to take, that's what we're doing. We're being a wonderful example of evil. I don't know that you should be using the word wonderful, but let's say an example, a symbol of evil. If you want to use the divisor and the minus sign, all you have to do is take. Gimme, gimme, gimme. Take, take, take. Are you eager to look for something that is free? If you're motivated by getting something for nothing, that's probably what you're going to get. Nothing. There's a lot of software available that is free, and it's free for two reasons. One is that they want you to try their product, and if you want more features, you can get them by buying their professional version instead of using their free version. But they gladly let you use the free version as long as you want. Well, some companies do, some don't. So if that's all you need, then you're taking advantage of the programmers that said they want to contribute something. And usually they have an opportunity where you can make a donation to them if you want to use the free version and still pay them something. The Bible says we should tithe, and tithe means 10% or a tenth part. What do you have that you can tithe? Well, if you're alive, you have life. And at the beginning of every day, you have 1,440 minutes. How many minutes do you want to use for your spiritual advancement? How many minutes do you want to use for being conscious of someone else's need and figuring out a creative way to supply it without you building up your ego? How about what did you do for a profession, or what do you do for a profession? Can you offer that talent or that skill to someone that would like to learn it without charging him? Do it as a gratuity? Maybe for a group of kids. How about for people that are on the street unemployed? How about for children that are at an orphanage? How about like the fellow in the Stand and Deliver movie? He was a successful aerospace engineer. He gave up his job to teach children in a disadvantaged area at a fraction of the price that he was getting for his salary. He taught kids that didn't even know anything about mathematics. He taught them calculus. Calculus. He got ridiculed by the school administration when he came there the first day and said, "That's what I want to teach." You know, he came there to be a math teacher, and they said, "What level of math are you planning to teach?" He said, "Calculus." They laughed at him. They said, our kids don't even know how math, you know, how they don't even know math. Basic elementary math. He said, I'll teach them. They worked in the summer when it was hot. It was in Los Angeles. They worked in the summer. No air conditioning. They needed it. They had a goal. They paced themselves and they didn't worry about the end result because the teacher kept encouraging them, saying that he knew they could do it. It's like when the teacher appears, the student is ready. When the student is ready, the teacher appears. Do we want to have a perfect Christmas? Are we willing to give more than nothing? Most people are takers. Believe me, I have a perfect opportunity to be able to know, because we have a website that has things on it that you cannot find anywhere else. We have thousands of people that visit our website. And I'm ashamed for them to know who gives and who doesn't and how much they give and how often. And most people give nothing. Most people give nothing. I was talking to a longtime friend who's a Christian Scientist, and I'd known him for 20 years, maybe more. And I said, do you ever visit our website? He said, yeah, I'm there all the time. He said, I think I've downloaded everything you've got on your website. And I mean, we've got over 1,000 things you can download. Over 1,000. How much do you think he's given us? Nothing. I didn't say anything to him. I just wanted to know if he ever went to the website. Because I thought this would be one guy that would want to pay a donation, give a donation. And you know what happened? He called us and asked us if we could give him a donation. He said he was having a very tough time and he needed to get some money somehow. So we sent him some money. Our job wasn't to judge him. Our job was to be like Christ Jesus. I heard a testimony one time about a fellow that was in going to college, and he was attending the college club for the Christian Scientist, and he was giving a testimony about it. And he said, you know, last week I really had a tough time. I was going here and there and everywhere and I was exhausted. And one night I got home about midnight. And I got a call from a friend. Who needed help. His car was broken down. And he was like, I don't know, an hour and a half drive away. So it meant, you know, minimum of 3 hour driving. And that's without even trying to figure out what to do with the car that was disabled. He was tempted to say, I'm too tired. I just can't do it. I'm exhausted. And then the thought came to him, what would Jesus do? What would Jesus do? He knew the answer before he asked the question to himself. So he was still on the phone with him, and he said, I'll leave right away. What would Jesus do? Have we ever thought about that before we take any action? Before we decide what we're going to do with our schedule? Richard Strain is, S-T-R-A-I-N, is an author that's on our website. He went to a practitioner one time, and he said, I'm exhausted. I don't know what to do. I'm working 18 hours a day, and the only thing I have left to do is have 6 hours a day to sleep and eat. She said, he went to a practitioner, and it was a woman, and she said, well, how much are you studying? He said, none. I don't have any time to study. And I told you, 18 hours a day I'm working. I get home, I'm there for 6 hours, and I turn around, and I'm out the door. Get home at midnight, and I'm out the door at 6 a.m, roughly. She said, if you're not studying 5 hours a day, you're not going to be able to get any progress. You're not going to be able to do what you want to do in terms of your spiritual solutions to your problem. He said, how can I do that? She's like Jesus. When Herod asked Jesus, what is truth? Jesus didn't answer. She was silent. She didn't answer. She made the statement. It was up to him to decide what he wanted to do with his life. He probably spent 5 minutes thinking about it before he said a word, and it probably seemed like an hour to him. He came to the conclusion that he didn't have any other choice. He didn't have any idea how he would do it. He didn't have any idea how he would be able to do it. But he said one thing. Okay, I'm going to do it. That was his decision. Okay, I'm going to do it. He didn't say, I'm going to try it. He didn't say, do you think it'll work? He didn't say, have you ever had anyone else in this circumstance and was their problem solved? No. He said, I'm going to do it. He made a commitment to do it. Not to think about it, not to consider it, not to question it. He said, I'm going to do it. Are we willing to make a commitment like that? You want to heal anything that's a problem? You follow our instructions that's on our website. Heal everything. And if you say, I'm going to do it, then you will get the results. Guaranteed. Guaranteed. I'm extremely grateful for the thought that came to me before I started this recording that said Christmas is only a few days away. People need to know how to have a perfect Christmas. I didn't know what I was going to say. They didn't have any clue. Never even thought about what I might say. Several hours passed by. Many hours. I don't know, it's probably been 10 or 12 hours. The thought came to me, this needs to be done. And I'm going to do it. As with all of our prayer treatments, they are extemporaneous. I have to change the title to them often when I get done with the recording from what I thought that the title should be. So often you will find that the title is different than what is in the recording as the first few words of the title, because I never know where thought is going to lead me, you know, what thoughts are going to come to me as I'm talking, and what inspiration is going to bubble up within me, come forth. But I'm very grateful for the idea, for the theme, and for the unfoldment of ideas as I'm talking that come forth. Because it's not for me. Well, if it's bad, then I guess you could. If you think this has been a totally unfruitful recording, then it probably did come. It obviously came from me. Mary Baker Eddy said that she could do instantaneous healing when she got Mary out of the way. So if I didn't get myself out of the way, then I suppose that it would be worthless. In fact, I know it would be worthless. Just like President Trump said in his book called Art of the Deal, he said, if I would be thinking about how much profit I would make on the deal, I'm sure it would be a failure. And Elon Musk stated on X, you know, which used to be called Twitter, in the last 2 or 3 days, about how valuable money is to him on a scale of 1 to, I think he said 1 to 100. And he said it's about a 1, maybe a 2, 1 or 2. He's considered the wealthiest man in the world. People that are involved in ideas are involved in ideas. He discovered how to send a spaceship up into the atmosphere and do what it was supposed to do, the biggest one that's ever been done, and bring it back to Earth and land it in its launching pad. He just did that in the last, 2 or 3 weeks or something. It's never been done before. The biggest spaceship. And it came back and landed in its launching pad. You think he could be thinking about money? You think he could be thinking about ego? Are you kidding me? He's got to think about one thing, and that is the principle that is involved to make it happen. Whether he's a practicing Christian Scientist or not, I don't know. Whether he knows it or not, but he is. Because he's cultivating perfection. And it's not for personal gain. If it weren't for him, we would still be depending on Russia to build our rockets. I always thought it was NASA, NASA, National Aeronautic and Space Administration. I thought they were building our rockets. No, Russia's been building our rockets. Russia's technology has been so far ahead of the U.S. that we didn't even try to do anything. No, we've been buying all of our rockets from Russia. For decades and decades. For 75 years, they've had their MiG, M-I-G, fighter airplanes. Would dance around anything we had. They've got an airplane that can stand on its tail a few feet off the ground and do tricks. And then take off like a rocket. Yeah, it's a fighter jet. And yet, what does mortal mind try to say? It disparages the character of President Putin, and it tries to say that Russia is the worst country in the world. When the fact is the opposite. The total opposite. We have friends that go over to Russia frequently. Every time they come back, they said they can't wait to go back to Russia. They said everybody is so friendly. They said if you want to start a new Christian Science church, do it over there. It's easy as pie to start a new church. He is promoting Christianity. Putin is promoting Christianity. They got rid of all the corrupt bankers from the Rothschild family. They got rid of the G5 towers, which are towers that try to control everyone that is connected to them. They got rid of all of the doctors that were promoting the pandemic because they knew it was a fraud. They have gone into Ukraine and have closed down the bioweapon factories. They've freed children from pedophilia and sent them back to, they sent them back to Trump. Yeah, American children that had been stolen from their families here in America, transported to Ukraine, and they were sex slaves. He rescued them. Everything we send to Ukraine is a money laundering operation that one of the top guys at Poland had just in the news yesterday that 50% of it is channeled back to the American politicians for under-the-table money. I think it's more than that. We think we've sent $80 billion over there. We have proof from our military who monitors all this stuff, and they said we've sent $2 trillion to Ukraine. $2 trillion. We are suckers because we are not guarding our thought and the thought of universal belief against corruption. We're letting them deceive, disparage character, money launder, everything. And we're at fault. It is our responsibility. Mary Baker Eddy said that if we don't practice Christian Science, we're going to go into the longest dark ages that is more intense and longer than civilization has ever known. We're on the edge. We're on the edge. We need to do our work. We've been practicing We've been talking about this on the website for several years, and we've got to do it. We've got to support our president, not as an individual, but as the office. And he's got the best team that anyone has ever had. They're planning to get rid of something like 90% or 95% of the government because it's all corrupt. All of the agencies that are sucking the budget dry, the FBI and CIA and NASA and FDA, and, you know, I could go on and on. Yeah, we've got to shut down the corruption. If we don't drain the swamp, we're going to be in it. Everyone. We have to do our work. We give you the treatments to show you how to do it. We have many treatments on the government and government control. This is getting long. It's already almost an hour and a half, so I'm going to close it down. But I am very grateful for every inspiration I've received from the Bible, Old Testament, New Testament. Remember Habakkuk? He said that God is of purer eyes than to behold evil. But as Jesus said, and Mary Baker Eddy said, we have to destroy the evil. We have to expose it. Not exposing people, but exposing the evil. We have to separate it. We have to separate the evil from the individual. In most cases, the individual is being blackmailed. They drug them. They entice them for low moral activity. And then they've got them on the hook. They've got them filmed with videos and so forth, and they've got them on the hook. So they get into this mess and they don't know how to get out of it. And they think they're going to get something for nothing, and they're giving their life away. That's the reason they have to keep approving these big budgets, because they're paying off their people that are blackmailing them. So we've got to just get it all exposed and rooted out and get rid of it. There's nothing that can interfere with the truth that has been stated in this treatment. Whatever the truth is, it is true. It doesn't change, and we can depend on it. And you have to decide for yourself if it passes the test. Mary Baker Eddy said, follow me as only as far as I follow the Christ. And we should do that with anything that we read or hear. Is this something that is part of the Christ consciousness that is being revealed to me? Or is it a lie? Mary Baker Eddy says, humanity is a lie upon lie that's been compounded forever. So we have to make sure that we're getting divinity as the source of our spiritual ideas and not something less than perfection that is tricking us. Everybody has to do that, no matter what the source seems to be. If you read something out of the Bible, there's a lot of things in there that are human opinions. We have to sort it out. Look at Psalms 103. It goes back and forth between human opinions and divine statements. We have to be able to detect what is true and what is false. That's why Mary Baker Eddy said this in the tenets, the spiritual inspiration of the Bible is our guide. The spiritual inspiration, not literal translations. Spiritual inspiration, spiritual interpretation. That's what we have to focus on. We have to focus on the Spirit. I'm going to close with the diapason of heaven which is a treatment written by Mary Baker Eddy that she gave to her class in the Metaphysical College from 1881 to 1898. And it's self-explanatory. And she recommends within the statement herself that we should recite this frequently. And there's a different one for each of the seven synonymous terms for God. And as a matter of fact, I think I'll do the one for spirit, because we've talked a lot about the flawless nature of spirit and the consciousness, how we have to be pure. And the one on truth would be applicable. I'll do both. I'll do the one on spirit and the one on truth, because consciousness is truth. And I'll terminate this recording with those two short treatments by Mary Baker Eddy. Diapason of heaven for spirit. We must declare often that spirit is not an invisible personality inhabiting a material body. Spirit has no other meaning than God and substance. We must declare there is only one spirit, and that is God. Spirit is my God, and my God is spirit. Individual, incorporeal, immaterial. Spirit is enthroned in my consciousness. Matter and personal sense are not enthroned. We must declare these statements for ourselves in our work. Truth. Truth is a sacred name for God. We must divest it of all materiality. Declare often, truth is my God, and my God is truth. Good is my truth, and my truth is good. Truth is enthroned in my consciousness. Error and materiality are not enthroned. This is the Word of God. Amen.